This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old Bloomington Normal, up to 88.3 FM in Pontiac in good old Central Illinois. We're going to have a great show for you today. Just wanted to let everybody out there know we are making progress on our Lincoln Station. It's in the cooker, and things are moving along, and so we're we're very confident that we are going to go ahead and be able to move on that project. And I want to remind everybody again, we are coming into the spring season, and that's baseball. And why am I mentioning that? Because we do need some heavy hitters out there. We are going to have $6,000 to invest and put into the station in Lincoln in order to get it up and running. And we need some people out there that can help us with that. Maybe there's somebody out there that could write us a check for $6,000. It would really be great, or maybe half of that. That would be great, too. Or even if you could write 1/6 of that, it would be nice. But if anybody can give us a big hit out there, we would appreciate it. And for smaller hitters, we do appreciate you, too. And anything that anybody can give, we would really appreciate it to get another station up and running. And we can be broadcasting to a huge number of people in Central Illinois. But we are making progress, and more people are listening. And people are converting. We've had some experiences already because of what they hear. And I think our show today will put an emphasis on why it's more important than ever for people to understand their faith and have a means of tuning in and finding out answers to their questions, and also getting a lot of good programming about Catholicism that EWTN broadcasts. And we do that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so we can really use your help, because remember, we are brought to you by you. And I'm here with my wife, Lynn, today, and again, we're going to have a great show. We talked last week about Lent, and Lynn did a great job about telling us all about what it is, and we made suggestions about what you can perhaps give up, but also we were heavily emphasizing on what people could do. And so we have decided to take our own advice, and so we are going to do something for the Lenten season. And what we're going to do is we are going to have catechesis for Lent, catechetical programs, whatever you want to say. We are going to do catechism for Lent, because it's more important than ever that the laity get involved. What with the scandals and what with the trauma that our church is going through, we need people who understand their faith, who love their faith, who can defend their faith, and put everything in perspective as to what's going on. And catechesis is a key to that. The more you understand, the more you can defend, the more you know, the more you will be able to defend your faith and stay in it regardless of all the heavy winds that are shaking the church at this time, and that have shaken it, of course, all through history and in the past. So that's what we're going to be jumping into. Before we get started, I'm going to ask my wife, Lynn, if there's anything she would like to add.
No, I really think you've covered it pretty good, pretty well. So, and remember, what you can do. That's a phrase, a catchphrase for Lent. Do what you can.
Do what you can. Learn. One of the most important things you can do is learn, but another important thing you can do, as I said, we need your help. Our station depends on you. You are the foundation of our station. Without you, we could do nothing. With you, we can do everything. So anything that you can do to help, we would really appreciate.
Turn Spirit Radio on in your house during Lent. We've been doing that. Well, we've done that always, but since the beginning. But during Lent especially, turn off that TV.
It's a great experience to listen instead of just watching, and you'd be amazed at the differences and the nuances between the two, and you'll start to pick up on them if you turn your radio on and you listen. And if you listen to Spirit Radio, you will learn, and you will also be inspired, and you will also start feeling more comfortable. You'll start feeling as if you have an ally out there that's with you, and that you can join with it to actually do something positive to build the church. And there's nothing better to build on no better foundation than to build on Catholic tradition. It is a foundation and a building that will stand in the storm. It's made out of rock, and it will take the winds of change and the winds of storm, where all other foundations and all other changes and so forth simply are not designed to do that. So that's why it's important to learn what that foundation is. At any rate, enough of that, and we'll get into why we're building up to this, and also why it's so important for the laity to become involved in their church. The clergy cannot do it alone, and to rely on it. I mentioned in last week the Irish experience. Why did Ireland have such a fall in faith, such a detraction from the faith in such a short period of time? Because as Catholic as they were, it was an emotional Catholicism built on the tradition more of their, you know, men rather than God, in the sense of that it was just traditional to be Catholic with a small t, not tradition with a capital T. And it was not really based on our thorough understanding of the faith. And when things changed in the 1960s and teachings changed, and we had clerics that came into the church, not all of them, of course, you know, that doesn't take many, but some of them coming in and teaching more modern things, they gave way to modernism very easily and very quickly. And that was warned against all the way back in the 19th century by Pope Leo XIII, and warned against it. So that's what happened. And so we have to reestablish that foundation that was allowed to wither away among the laity, and bring it back, and that's what we're doing. And we're going to start today talking about that, and that will lead up to our catechesis. And then next week we will begin with how we got the Bible. But before we can even talk about how we got the Bible, we have to understand by what authority the Bible even came into existence. And so there's where we're going to start today, and I think it's going to be a great show in doing that, and I'll get started. But again, you want to add anything to that, Lynn?
No, let's get it rolling.
Okay, we'll get into it. But we're going to call this In Defense of Our Faith, The Need for Catechesis and Apologetics. And why do we need this specifically? I gave an overall view of why we need it, but why do we need this specifically?
If you can't defend your faith unless you know it.
Exactly.
And know the whys and wherefores that things are there. There's a reason for just about everything.
And that word know it, I mean, just like there's so much of an emphasis today, and it's certainly a good emphasis on having a relationship with Jesus and knowing Jesus, of course we must. You can't love something that you don't know, and that's why it's important. But you also have to have a love of your church and its teachings and its doctrines. And in order to do that, you have to know not only what they are, but why they're there, where they came from, and how important they are. And the fact is that when you know that, it's an automatic defense. And we have to defend today against two things. We have to remember that. We have to defend against modernism, this modern secular idea of everything can be material and focused just strictly on the earth, and that our government can be that way, and it can ignore, you know, the whole foundation that Western civilization was built on. And we have to also defend ourselves not only from that. In the early days, the church had to defend itself from paganism. Christianity had to defend itself from paganism, but, non-Christianity, in other words. But today, we also have competition from other people who call themselves Christians themselves. In other words, we have the disunity that we did not have back then. So we have a two-pronged attack, so to speak, if you want to call it that. It certainly is by the secularists an attack, and maybe very strong disagreement by our Protestant brothers and sisters. But the point is if you're going to defend your faith, you need to be able to defend it both ways and understand that it's necessary secularly, and it's also necessary to bring us all together again. So that's the other important thing. Any more you want to comment on that, Lynn?
No.
Okay. At any rate, I'm just going to give a few things throughout here, specific examples that will probably be familiar to you, And these will be some of the reasons why we need to defend our faith and some of the reasons leading up to why we have to start at the very, very beginning of that faith. We can't start somewhere in the middle or even a little way into it. We have to start at the very beginning point, and that's what we're going to do today. But have you ever heard some of these from Catholics? You may be hearing from people other than Catholics too, but it's sad to hear these things coming from Catholics. And but they're so common, and perhaps you've said some of these things yourself. I certainly have, you know, sometime in my past, you know, you sort of get catechized, and I think maybe we had a pretty good job of getting catechized. My wife went to Catholic school, so she certainly had a good foundation. But as time goes on, and especially when you're younger, the secular society sort of drifts into your thinking, and so you fall into some of these without even thinking about it unless you're really strong in the knowledge of your faith. Here's one, and then we'll just go through these, Lynn, and you can comment on them. I've heard this. I'm sure everybody else that's out there has heard it too. You hear somebody say, sometimes I go to Mass, sometimes I go to other churches with my friends. After all, we all believe in Jesus, and that's all that counts, right?
Nope. And we don't all end up in the same place.
You know, we're all going to the same place. Not necessarily so. I mean, we have to remember that our Lord taught that, you know, it's a narrow gate.
And you hear people say, well, the Mass is boring. Well, if you didn't know what was going on, it probably is boring.
It is if you don't know all of the elements of the Mass and where they came from. I mean, the historical foundation of these things is so rich, yet not just in something that Christ preached, but in what he did and, you know, where he went and what the apostles engaged in with him. I mean, the whole Mass is a drama, you know, and it has a huge meaning. And when you know what all that is and you become so familiar with it, you come to love it. Just like when you become so familiar with Jesus, you come to love him. So we have to have both. I mean, right from the beginning, St. Athanasius and others said, you know, the church flies on two wings. One is faith and the other is reason. And our faith has to be both faith and reason. We have to know what it is and we have to know why it is. We have to know how to defend it. And then when we do these things, we'll come to love it. Just like you would defend your own home or your own family or your own town or the things around you. You do it because you're familiar with them. You know what they are. And you can explain them, and you love them, because you're in them and with them, and that's how you has to be with church.
Right, and we do not go to Mass to be entertained. We go to Mass to worship God, as in the Ten Commandments. It goes all the way back into the Old Testament to worship God.
And we will learn, you know, all of those things that Lynn is mentioning as we go along. Right now, we're just trying to establish the foundation of why do we need to know them and where do we start. And that's what we're going to do today. We'll get through that today. And then we'll go into the actual things themselves.
Even the Mass, we'll cover that too.
Exactly. You might have heard this. Oh, it doesn't matter any, it doesn't make any difference in what religion you have. They're all good. They all teach the same thing. Is that true, Lynn?
No, they don't. It's a far-fetched idea that they all teach the same thing.
I mean, read what, you know, Buddhism teaches. It's the opposite of Christianity. I mean, it teaches, in effect, the blank, how, you know, one is truth and two is error. That somehow or another, you know, it's sort of like not exactly pantheism, but what they call panentheism. You know, we somehow merge with all of the material world and so forth. And the highest state is a state of almost unconsciousness, to merge with all of the world and so forth. Christianity doesn't teach that at all. It teaches that, you know, God and the world are absolutely separate. And our job is to worship God. And our job is to conquer the world, not in a way of unloving. You know, we don't cease to love it. We love it. But at the same time, we come to understand, you know, put it in its proper perspective. So the things are not the same at all there. And we'll go into that more as we go along, but they're the opposite. So another one is, I don't believe in all this churchy religion stuff. It's being spiritual that really counts. Now, what about that, Lynn?
I don't know how you can have one without the other. I mean,
no, because the fact is that, you know, if Christ came and taught things, we draw conclusions from his teaching. You can't help but draw, you know, lessons. And those lessons, you know, turn into dogmas. This is good and that's bad. We should do this and not do that. And so forth. It's impossible not to draw. This is how people are, to try and say, oh, I can just have sort of a spiritual feeling. That's really not a guide. I mean, most of that's a guide to fall into just obeying what your own particular desires happen to be, or your belief or thinking based on your emotion, and that doesn't sail well at all. It might carry people for a little while, but they don't realize that they have actually been Christians, you know, and lived in a Christian society, and so their thinking and their doing is shaped by the osmosis of that Christianity around them. But when that fades away, and it is fading, the thinking will change, and we see it changing now. So that's no good either.
No, and I think you should keep in mind, too, that there are Catholics, some people think there are Catholics, and there are Christians.
Yeah, well,
somebody needs it. You know, we will explain to you what it really means.
We'll get into that as well. So, and another one is, I don't need to go to church. I'm a good person. God loves me. Well, God loves all of us, but he wants the best for us.
And he wants to be loved too.
And he wants to be loved. And also he has come to this earth for particular reasons. And we'll get into those. We'll get into some of those, you know, even today before we get into the catechesis. So that simply is not true. And then when I'm a good person, I mean, what do you mean by a good person? I mean, it's, you know, it's pretty easy for us to think, well, I haven't murdered anybody and I don't go out and rob banks, so I must be a pretty good person. Well, that leaves a lot of room in between. And so there's a lot of things that we do that hurt both the individuals and society that we don't even realize. And I know I've done an awful lot of it and still do it without thinking, and so does everybody else. So we need to come to a stronger understanding of religion than just, you know, I don't need to go to church, I'm a good person. That's not, that doesn't sail, and it's not going to help build society either. But any more, Linda, you want to say?
Well, when you make the statement like that, that I am a good person, I'd like you to look at yourself in the mirror and ask the question, am I a good person or am I too full of pride?
That's a very good question to ask, and most of us, if we are honest with ourselves, are going to answer, I'm too full of pride.
But so, most of us look in the mirror and say, it's the opposite.
At any rate, we're going to have to take a break here and stay with us. We'll come back to talk a little bit more about these various excuses, lame excuses I call them, and that we're all guilty of. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
When you're looking for intrigue, drama, friendship, and as the plot unfolds, betrayal, love, sorrow. A performance to keep you on the edge of your seat. You must see the American Passion Play. The Passion Play is the story you have known coming to life on the stage of the Center for the Performing Arts. This play is coming to Bloomington for a limited time with only 5 performances. So don't delay. Get your tickets now. For dates and ticket information, go to AmericanPassionPlay.org. Tickets are on sale now.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break, and we're talking about the need for catechesis, and we're talking about some specific things that people say and do that show how much we have a need for that among Catholics especially. And we are leading up to why, you know, the beginning of our faith, starting at the very beginning, but we're also leading up to why we so much need the catechesis that a lot of us don't have, and why catechesis and apologetics has to be introduced back into the church. I mentioned that we face things that the early church didn't face. We face a secular society that didn't exist back at that time, that is actually attacks the church. And then we face the problem of division in Christianity that didn't exist back at that early time when Christianity was just starting. So we're talking about some of the things people say and show that how much there is a need for understanding their Catholic faith and how important it is, and how it does differ from many of the other faiths in the world and differs even from some of the things that our own Protestant brothers and sisters believe and why those differences are important, and we must understand them and defend, you know, the church, and it certainly is very, we can defend all of our doctrines. But one of the things I might want to mention, Lynn, is this is something that I actually heard and from a lady. This happened to be a lady, but I'm sure, you know, it's said by a lot of people. I think I've heard it probably before in different forms, but I happened to be talking to a lady, and I don't know, just in a conversation it came out that she was Catholic, you know, both of us were Catholic, and she says, oh, she says, yeah, she says, you know, one of the things, she says, I go to Mass on one Sunday, she said, and then on the next Sunday I go with my friends to, you know, to their churches or to a different Protestant church, and pretty much said something about, you know, after all, you know, we all believe in the same thing, so it's perfectly okay, you know, to take one Sunday like that and go to Mass, and another Sunday to go to my Protestant friend's church, you know, in place of going to Mass. So what do you say to that, Lynn?
We, as I said before, we don't go to Mass to be entertained, and that's what she liked about going to a mega church, that she was being entertained. We're there to worship two different things.
Yeah, that's right. You were mentioning something about someone that said, you know, why can't we do that in a Catholic church or something?
Yes.
Because, you know, the whole, if you say a statement like that, it shows that you're not properly catechized, that you don't understand your faith and you don't understand why we're at Mass and why it's important and absolutely necessary to be there and why it's a grave sin to miss Mass on a Sunday. It's not something that the church, when we say the church even, we shouldn't be saying it like that. I do it myself. But we are all the church. And that's what the early church handed on to us, you know, being taught from Jesus. So we need to understand these things. So, you know, this is another reason right there, a specific example of why we need catechesis and apologetics and why we have to understand not only what our faith is, but why it is. And why we have to have develop, not just develop a relationship with Jesus, as important as that is, we also have to know and understand our church so that we will love Jesus and our church, because we're going to find out a little bit about how our church came into existence.
When you find that out, you will fall in love with the Mass and with Jesus, most importantly, with Jesus.
I've heard people, here's another one, the Eucharist is just a symbol. So I can go to communion with my friends at their churches. Why do I just have to go at the Catholic Church? What do you say to that one, Lynn?
They certainly don't understand what the consecrated host is. It's not a symbol. It is a thing. It's done with matter. It's the Spirit of God. More than that, people say the Spirit of God is here. Well, the body and blood of Christ.
It's the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ himself.
Exactly.
That's in that Eucharist. And we go there because Christ commanded us to do it. It's not, he didn't say, I suggest. He said, you know, this is, do it. And we'll get into that a little bit too as we go along here. Another one, Lynn, as I've heard, is like, I'm sure most people have heard this, you know, why confess sins to a priest? Why should I confess my sins to a priest? I like my friend's church. They go straight to the big guy. I mean, isn't that what we should do? Just go straight to Jesus? Or straight to God?
That's not what Jesus taught us to do.
No, no. God knows what our sins are. I mean, he doesn't have to be told. He knows. You could make a good case if that's the case and just saying, God, you know what my sins are. Just take care of them and just move on. You know, but that's not what Jesus told us to do. And again, when Jesus tells us something, these things that he told us to do were not suggestions. They were commandments.
That is in the Bible.
Right. And we'll go along and we'll find a lot of that. But we don't start with the Bible, and we'll see why as we go along. Okay. Another one is, you know, we won't get into this real big here, but I'm just going to let Lynn, you know, what do you think of this one, Lynn? The Pope is just a man. He's not infallible.
That's not what Jesus said.
What does that show? I mean, what
it shows ignorance.
Ignorance about infallibility and what the church teaches. I mean, you know, this, we'll get into it. That no one says that the Pope is infallible as a man, you know, and infallibility has to be understood. So without that, you say things like that, and it just shows that, you know, of course you would make a statement like that if you didn't understand infallibility. And no, I would. If you think infallibility is what you think it is, then you're right to criticize it. But it's not what you think it is if you're making that statement. So
we go back to the pride thing. It's easy to say, Jesus, you know my sins, take them away. When you have to go down and admit that, it's quite another. It takes that pride away.
Exactly. And we'll get into that as we go through catechesis. You know, we'll cover all of those things as we go along through Lent here. And I think it'll be enjoyable, a learning experience, and something very worthwhile. At any rate, another one is just, and is this one you hear so much, why not just stick with the Bible? It's God's instruction manual, isn't it?
He didn't. I don't think he sat and wrote it down. I don't think Jesus did. I know he didn't.
Exactly. So we're going to go into that, too, why it's necessary to have more than just what that statement implies. And then finally, you get, what's the big deal about tradition? You know, the Catholic tradition. What's the big deal about that? Every church has a tradition, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but with a little t. We're talking about tradition with a big T. It is very important to what you believe, how you believe it, and what you do.
Absolutely. There's a difference between tradition with a big T, that is sacred tradition that's handed on to us by God himself, by Jesus Christ himself, and tradition with a little t, which is our own tradition. You know, those little things that can be changed, there's a huge difference. So when we talk about tradition, we have to understand, what is it that we're talking about? Otherwise, we get confused, and we could be condemning something that we should be supporting, and then conversely, we could be supporting something that we shouldn't be supporting, so unless we understand it. So that's
in the Old Testament, in Leviticus, God instructed those people how he wanted them to worship. Jesus changed that in the New Testament.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that as we go along in catechesis. We can't get into that today, but we certainly will. At any rate, let's begin at the beginning. You know, in other words, where does anybody get the authority to tell us what we should believe and to tell us, you know, that's what some people ask sometimes. They say, you know, where are all these priests? Where does the Pope or where does the bishop get the authority to tell me what I should believe? Well, that's a good question. And that's what we're going to go into. Where do they get the authority? Do they just make up what we should believe out of thin air? What do you think, Lynn? Is that what they do? Sit down one day and say, hey, this is a good idea. Let's put it out there and say, hey, we're in charge here. You guys go do this.
No, they have to do, or they are doing, what Jesus himself instructed them to do.
Exactly. So let's begin at the beginning. Just exactly, you know, where do we start? And I think a great place to start is right here. And you can comment on this, Lynn, after I lay it out here. Okay. I'm going to ask a question here. Assuming that Christ is who he says he is, and that's the assumption we're making here. We're assuming that Christ is who he says he is, and I promise we will address that later. If anybody wants to make a charge of, like, we disagree with who Christ says he is, we will answer that. But right now, we're assuming that Christ is who he says he is. Why did he come to earth as one of us? That's the question we're asking. Assuming that he is who he says he is, that he is actually the Son of God, that he is God himself in a sense, a person of the Trinity, why did he come to earth as one of us? I mean, what's the reason? And so you hear so much today that centers around some of these things I'm going to lay out here, because our secular society focuses so much on them. Sort of like a whirlpool or whatever, or a tornado maybe, it sort of sucks us in, and we start focusing on these things as if they are the end-all and be-all of everything, when they're really not. But did he come here to teach us the golden rule? What do you think, Lynn? Is that why he came, to teach us the golden rule? That was the main reason he came, to do unto others as you know, we would have others do unto us?
No, not at all. Much deeper than that.
Yes.
He came to for us.
That's right. He came for
he
us.
He made a sacrifice for us.
Exactly. Did he come here to establish social justice?
No.
No, I don't think he did. I mean, this is a fallen world, right?
That's right.
I mean, it's important to be doing to others as you do unto yourself. Those things are important. But in established social justice, those things are important. But are they the primary thing that Christ came for? And I guess, you know, both of us, you and I agreed, no, that's not the primary reason why he came. What about to free us from material want? Is that why he came?
No. No. Quite the opposite.
He, in fact, said the poor will always be with you.
That's right.
I mean, after all, this is a fallen world. We have to remember that.
And we got to remember when the poor, when he's speaking of the poor, it's not only those who are in need of physical and, you know, food, shelter, and clothing. He's talking about the spiritually deprived people, too.
Exactly. Would we be capable, really, as human beings, just by ourselves, and this, again, is what people seem to have accepted, this is the modern idea, would we be capable of actually applying the golden rule, you know, and getting everybody to do it? Would we as human beings be capable of establishing perfect social justice on earth? Would we as human beings be capable of freeing everyone from material want? What do you think looking at our record so far, Lynn?
No. Because, you know, that is something that you have to rely on God for.
Exactly.
You have to have the strength and the spirituality to do that.
Exactly. Without God's grace, we are not capable of doing any of those things. Without God's grace, we are not capable. We can't even save ourselves. We can't lift ourselves up by our own bootstraps without God's grace. We can't do it. So, and we'll get, you know, to why this is so. But the point is I think the human experience, it should be enough evidence to show us. We spent trillions and trillions of dollars in this country on the war on poverty. Have we won? What do you think?
Look around. I don't think so.
I don't think we have. We spend trillions and trillions of dollars of doing the same thing in other countries and building democracy and everything else. Have we succeeded?
Nope.
No, we haven't. The fact is that unless we become humble and a little more, you know, exercise a little more humility, we have got to understand there's something going wrong. And there's a reason this historical experience shows. It's one of the reasons why Christ came to earth, and we'll get to that in a minute. But did he come here to make us all equal?
No. Why would he?
Isn't that a big thing that's coming back into existence now? All of a sudden, right here in our own country, this idea of some of the, you know, ideological and politics and so forth, that we're going to equalize everybody, the egalitarian idea?
Well, that's, I don't know, to me that's a very American idea.
Think it'll work?
Well, it hasn't been.
No, it's not even really American totally. I mean, this, you know, the idea that, you know, equality was supposed to be before the law, and that has sort of gotten out of hand worldwide, that somehow equality, you can make everybody equal in other ways. We spent a lot of money and effort and time and tears, especially in blood, trying to do it. So far, it hasn't worked. What about to make an earthly paradise? Is that going to work?
We aren't going to have a paradise here.
No. Then what did he come for? I mean, free us from oppressors? I mean, did he come just only to free us?
No,
did he come just
no,
to free?
His community, the yes. Jewish community, thought that he would militarily overtake the Romans. It's not why he was here. That's not his kingdom.
Did he come to restore, you know, the Jews to power? Did he come to, you know, fight off Rome and destroy Rome, tear it down, expand the temple and so forth and everything and make the Jews the pride and joy of the world again? Is that where he came?
No. He came to show us another way.
Exactly. But what is the driving, primary, single, most important thing that Jesus came for? And we're going to answer that and then get into that in the next segment. And the most important thing, you were hitting at it just a little while ago, and I sort of stopped. I didn't want to get it out there.
You didn't want to get the word out.
Right now, so what's the single most important thing you came for, Lynn?
Our salvation.
That is exactly it. Our salvation, to get us to heaven. In fact, isn't that what Chesterton said? G.K. Chesterton, a great, great writer and newspaper man and sort of sage of the past, a very great literary figure. He was an Anglican, and he converted to Catholicism. And that was the time when if you were an Anglican and from a family like Chesterton and a position, like he was, of fairly renown and responsibility and so forth, with a lot of friends that were all, Anglican and organizations and so forth that were, it was a pretty big thing to convert. I mean, you were really swimming against the stream when you did something like that. So, of course, most of his friends were shocked, and they were asking, why did you do this? And he said a little bit, because he was sort of like, he loved humor. So he said a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but at the same time he was serious. He says, to get my sins forgiven. That's why I converted. And the fact is that he was nailing the very primary reason that Jesus Christ came to this earth, so that we can get our sins forgiven, so that we can achieve salvation. And that's the prime purpose why he came here. And that's the prime reason and why we should focus on that particular reason and not be focused on all kinds of other things. We should focus on the fact that the most important thing that the church does and can do is salvation. Everything in our religion and everything in our church and everything, from the emptying waste baskets, to cleaning the windows, should be focused on getting us to heaven. And so we're going to stop here. We're going to have to take a break. We'll come back and pick up that theme and find out how is that going to be done. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Epiphany Church on College Avenue in Normal invites you to a remarkable opportunity to hear a world-renowned theologian. Father Jacques Philippe's inspiring presentations begin at 6:30 p.m. on March 10th through 12th. He will also celebrate a Mass in French on Sunday at 3 p.m. and then host Lectio Divina at noon on Tuesday. These events are free and open to all. Find out more details about Father Philippe's March 10th through 12th itinerary online at epiphanyparish.com/events.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break, and we have been talking about the catechesis and why it's important and leading up into its importance and why it's necessary. And we've led up to the idea that Jesus Christ came here for one reason, and that is our salvation. That's the most important reason that he came to earth, and the most important work of the church, the Catholic Church, is to achieve that goal. I mean, everything, as I was saying, in a church, it should be directed at that. So, at any rate, we'll go into that theme just a little bit more, and we will, get to the very beginning and lay the groundwork for, the catechesis and what the church teaches and why it teaches it that comes after. I do want to talk a little bit about, again, before we finally quite get to that point, why us? I mean, why did he have to come here? Why did Jesus Christ have to actually become incarnate and become a man and come down with us? Why us? How are we different, let's say, from the rest of God's creation? And when you ask that question, you have to ask, how are we different from the spiritual world? How is the spiritual world different from us? We can ask, some things. Well, maybe in the spiritual world, there's no sin, maybe. The angels, can the angels choose sin, Lynn? Did they ever choose sin?
Yes. The angels, the fallen angels, chose not to follow Christ.
Exactly. They did. So angels can choose sin. So, you know, there can be rebellion in the spirit world, so it can't be for that reason alone. What's the difference between the angels choosing sin and us choosing sin, Lynn?
The angels had a one-time opportunity. Of course, we have to realize their knowledge was much greater than ours. And once they made their decision to for or against, that was it.
Exactly.
With us, God is more merciful, maybe you want to say, because it's over and over and over again. He just keeps offering us his mercy.
It isn't, you know.
But he'll run out of patience.
It isn't just only even more merciful in this particular sense when we look at the spirit angels. Like you say, they have this knowledge. They can see far, far down, you know, into eternity or the future that we can't see. They can see, you know, the both sides. So when they make a choice, they are making a choice for all eternity. Whereas we don't live in a timeless world. You know, in other words, they're outside of time, and we're not.
Right.
We're in a material world. It's an entirely different world. So because we're in that material world, we're different from the angels, and the whole material world is different. So we can choose to sin and cause the world to fall as it did and lose that permanence that it could have had without sin. But the angels can't undo it once they make that decision. But when we're still here on this earth in the material world, we can, because we're in time. And that makes a huge difference between the two worlds. One's outside of time and one's in time. And there's a world of difference between the two.
Right. The angels are spirits.
Exactly. So
a whole different realm they exist in.
So should God have made the material world? A person could say, well, then why did he make us? I mean, if this is the case, if the material world can fall, if it can decay, it can be subject to all these things, it must be evil. Why did he make it? Is the material world evil?
Well, he said when he made it that it was good.
No, he said it was good. God saw what he made and said it was good. You know, but there have been so many people throughout the ages, and there are so many pagan philosophies and religions that teach that somehow the material world is bad and the spirit world is good. You know, this dualism. And Christianity does not incorporate that dualism. That's more, you know, something that is associated with Gnosticism, which we'll get into as we go along. So, no, the material world is not bad, but it's different. It's subject to decay and sin. It's subject to defects. And so it is different. So why did God make it? Why did God make it differently?
That's a question for ages. We all wonder in every age, why did you make me?
Well, that's for sure. We can't know ultimately. But the point is that we do know a few things. One is, just use your logic. Suppose God made us differently. Would he have made us, Lynn?
No, if it were different, I wouldn't be me.
Would you be you if you were different? If you
no.
were not material, would you be you? In other words,
I don't know, but I don't think so.
Yeah, there's a whole range of things, you know, that are possible. I mean, God does not contradict himself. He does not contradict his own logic. And our logic is God's logic. I mean, our logic is small. His logic incorporates all. But nevertheless, The similarities are there. You know, God doesn't say that a rock and a carrot can exist at the same time. God doesn't say that a triangle can be a circle. I mean, God doesn't. You can put God can and then have a whole bunch of nonsense, you know, gibberish after it, and it's still nonsense and gibberish. And this is sometimes where other religions get into this idea that, you know, this is putting limits on God. No, it means that God is order and creation and out of chaos. And so God is logic, and logic is a certain thing, and it doesn't contradict itself. And so God can't make us, in the sense that when I say can't, I'm not trying to put limits on God, but he's not going to make something that's not us and then say it's us, because it wouldn't be us. And that, you know, so but what's the ultimate reason why God decided, you know, if we get to play, you know, Hamlet, the character Hamlet in Shakespeare, and that's a great play, and it's totally you can't understand that play unless you understand that Shakespeare was Catholic You cannot understand that play unless you understand it from Catholic theology and a Catholic position. I'll charge that and I'll stand behind it. You can't understand it. And Hamlet says, to be or not to be, that is the question. And it is. That is the most basic question there is. Why did God make us? Because to be is better than not to be, because God is existence itself. God just is. He is the existent that is the cause or the bringer of all other things into existence. So to be is better than not to be. And God is what else then? What do we all say? God is what? What does he do among all things? Why does he want us to be saved? Because he what?
He wants us to be with him in heaven.
Because he loves us. God yes. is love. And he made all the spectrum, ourselves including, not just, he didn't leave anything out. He made the whole complete. And the medievals used to understand that from the lowest to the highest. The whole spectrum was made, the whole creation, because God is love, and all that to be he brought into existence. And so we are on that spectrum, and so he made us to be or not to be, and to be, and we'll show that as we go along, is better than not to be.
And it's all logical.
Exactly. But again, we have to understand, material is not evil, it's good, but it is what it is. Just as iron is not steel, and steel is not glass, and so on. And so material is not spirit. And we have to understand that we're both spirit and material. God made the material world, and he also made the spirit world. And we are a combination. We have a spiritual soul. And so and that is what life is itself, is, you know, as God says. In other words, without spirit, there is no life. I mean, there is something that goes into material that causes it to be different, that causes it to be alive. And there's a difference between life or death. And to bring something into being, God's creation, is an act of life. It's an act of giving. And so we have to understand that. So the world is material. It can fall, and sin can cause it, you know, to fall and be defective. And so that's the world we live in, a material world in which sin made it defective. And Jesus Christ came here so we can regain our salvation and be with him in heaven. And that's the, you know, the reason that he came. And Jesus Christ came to give that message. And we'll see as we go along. The historical lesson is that we cannot do it by ourselves. The Jews learned this. The law and the material was not enough. The blood of calves, the blood of, you know, goats or whatever is not enough. And also the law by itself is not enough either. There has to be more than that. And the experience of the Jews was necessary to lead up to that. And so we can look back on that and see that that's the case. We have evidence to show. We have our own evidence right here to show that we're not successful on our own without the grace of God. So at any rate, that brings us up to the point where when we ask, you know, why did he come? He came for salvation. The question now is did he leave any means of salvation before he left this earth, Lynn?
He left the tradition of the church. He left us with his spirit, and he said that he would be with us until the end.
But that's the question that everybody has to ask, and everybody has to answer is, the big question is, did Christ leave any means of teaching what I've just talked about and doing what I've just talked about? Teaching about salvation and creating and doing salvation.
He left the apostles.
What if it is, you know, did he leave something? You say he left the apostles. Okay, go ahead.
He left the apostles so that they could instruct us and share with us what Jesus wanted us to hear. He didn't leave us alone.
No, okay. Again, the question is...
He did not write anything down.
Did he? Did he leave anything? Did he? Did
his
he really
word.
Leave anything?
He left his words.
What did he leave? If he did so, this is a question for all Protestants out there. Did he leave any means of passing on the information for us to achieve our salvation? And if he did, what is it that he left here? And I'll ask you then, did he leave the Bible?
No, he didn't.
Did he tell the apostles, he says, hey, I'm going, but here's an instruction manual. If you have any questions, just check right here in this book. You don't have to bother with me. Did he say that?
Nope.
No. What did he leave? Did he leave nothing? He left the apostles, but they're going to die. So what did he leave?
Well, he left his authority to the apostles.
He left his authority to the apostles, but when the apostles die, there goes the authority. So what did Christ leave? What did he establish that we still have to this day after he left?
The tradition.
Well, how does that tradition get carried on? Who does it?
It gets carried on because as they die off, they were commissioned to ordain others to bring these things to us.
What do we call that? What do we call that organization that does all that? What do
the
we
church.
The church. Great, exactly.
You finally got it out of me.
Finally got it out of you, the church. He did leave us something, but it wasn't the Bible. There was no Bible that he left. There was nothing written down. In fact, Christ didn't write anything down as far as we know, except that time he was scratching around in the sand. That's the only time I can think of when he was trying to, decide they were going to stone Mary Magdalene, and he was knelt down and was scratching around in the sand, and the Pharisees were watching him do it. And then he told them, whoever was without sin, cast the first stone. But we don't know exactly what he wrote. So if he was writing
anything at all. And I'm not sure that was Mary Magdalene. It's been a question to me.
Well, maybe so. But at any rate, we don't really, I'm just using it as an example. That's the only place I can think of. And he didn't write anything down. He didn't write a Bible, and he didn't tell people, don't worry about it. I'll take care of you. I'm going to inspire you to write a Bible, and then that'll be your instruction manual from then on. No, he established a church. And how did he do that? How did he establish a church? Well, he took the apostles out, remember?
Yes, to a very scary place.
Took them out to a very scary place, and I'm going to try to...
The people believed at the time this place had deep caverns and so forth, and that this was the gateway to the other world.
Exactly. It was out at Caesarea Philippi. He brings them out there. And it's a scary place. It's along the Jordan River. There's a huge cliff on one side of the river and big cascades that come out of the cliffs and everything, or the hills and rock and so forth, that cascade down into the Jordan River there. And he takes them out there, and the apostles are a little, that they know they're not out there for just a tour of the river. And so he asked the apostles, he says, who do the people say that I am? And they answered. They said, well, some say you're Elijah, some say Jeremiah, some say that you're one of the prophets. And he turns to, or he asked them first, he turns to Peter, rather, actually, Simon Bar-Jonah, and he says, who do you say that I am? And Simon Bar-Jonah answers, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said to him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, flesh and blood have not revealed this, but my Father in heaven. And this is in Matthew 16:13. If you read Matthew 16:13, you'll find these passages. And so Jesus is establishing his church. And he says, you are a rock, he tells Peter, Simon Bar-Jonah. And on this rock, I will build my church. So that's what he establishes, Lynn. He establishes a church. That is the means that he gave to pass on the knowledge and information that it takes to get the salvation that we need. And he says to Peter, which means rock, Peter is rock, when he calls him Peter, his name was Simon Bar-Jonah, he says, I'll give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth is bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. So he's given Peter, rock, formerly Simon Bar-Jonah. And why are the apostles stunned when he says you are a rock? Why are they stunned?
Because in their culture, rock meant God.
Exactly. And so they're just absolutely stunned. And then later on, of course, in Matthew 18:15, if we go on, he brings in the others. He goes on and he tells them the same thing. In other words, he says, all I have been given, all of the authority on earth, has been given to me, Matthew 18:15, I think. And he says that he is then giving it to them. So both Peter gets it first, and then he incorporates the rest of the apostles. And then later on in the Council of Jerusalem, we can see the whole group of them acting. Do non-Jews need to be circumcised in order to become Christians? At first, most of them think, yes, they have to. And then Peter reminds them, no, Jesus performed his miracles for both non-Jews and Jews as well, and for Gentiles as well as Jews. And so Jesus Christ incorporated everybody, and Peter makes the decision that they don't need it. He is using the authority that Christ gave him. And so they're that very first council. And we're going to have to stop here, and we have led up to the very beginning. That's how the church got started. If Jesus is who he said he was, he came here for a reason, to affect our salvation. And if you ask the question, did he leave anything to do it with? Yes, he did, a church. That's what he left. And he established that church, and he said, the gates of hell will not prevail against it. In other words, the gates of hell will never prevail against it. This is my church, not my churches, but my church. And that's how Jesus Christ established his church. And we'll take up from that point on next week and show how we got the Bible. So anything you want to say, we're going to have to stop here and end the program.
No, but read Exodus about the rock when they are out in the desert.
That's interesting. At any rate, we're going to end our program with our usual prayer. Saint Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly hosts, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.